You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Before we hear our passage for today, a little context. When I'm choosing what to preach on, I try to go with series that are based on issues that seem relevant to what's going on in the world. However, when I first started out, I'd been trained to prepare my messages based on what's called the Revised Common Lectionary. The lectionary is a list of set readings for every Sunday of the year. The idea is that over the course of 3 years, called years A, B, and C, you work your way through every major theme in the Bible. Roman Catholics and many mainline churches stick to this plan, well, religiously. And while this makes for easier long-term planning for liturgy and music, it also tends to be pretty archaic thematically. Case in point is Advent. Here it is, the four Sundays leading up to Christmas, and the set texts are talking about what? The apocalypse? Yep. The sun will be darkened and the stars will fall from the sky. Nation will rise against nation and blood will be running in the streets. Woohoo! Merry Christmas. Well, for whatever reason, the Middle Ages ushered in Advent's emphasis on the end times and a violent, terrifying second coming. Ever since then, in churches around the world, scary stories about the end of days are being read in the middle of a season that today emphasizes joy and peace. So, on the one hand, you have a little baby meek and mild, and on the other, Jesus wielding an executioner's sword. So, where did these texts come from in the first place? Well, the text we're hearing today is from Mark, our oldest gospel. At the time of its writing, the late 60s, early 70s, Mark's community was under siege. They'd been rejected by their fellow Jews. The Romans were closing in militarily, and people were anxious. Mark responds by having his Jesus tell people, "Don't you worry, things are going to get bad. But just when you least expect it, wham, the Son of Man is going to return and knock some heads. Just you wait. They're going to get theirs." Well, and as it turns out, for all kinds of psychological reasons, people get comfort from the idea that God loves them, but is going to eliminate with extreme prejudice everyone who doesn't believe exactly like they do. The Left Behind series by Tim LaHaye is a perfect example. They're looking for the Messiah in extravagant and super violent epiphanies. Sadly, many Christians believe in this stuff and spend all their time trying to calculate the time so they can be ready for a big showdown that is never going to happen. So, just keep in mind that today's passage was written for a community not sure if they were going to survive. Everything in the culture and society seemed to be lining up against their succeeding. They were discouraged and uncertain. And this passage is part of a kind of pep talk, assuring the listeners that all they have to do is keep awake. The moment is coming. Get ready. It's going to be big.
Our words of wisdom are from Mark chapter 13, verses 32 through 37. "But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It is like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his slaves in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch.
Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening, or at midnight, or at cockcrow, or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church."
Thanks be to God.
Americans have a reputation around the world. We don't like to wait. We want what we want, quick and easy. Like the tourist who rushes into the Louvre in Paris and says to the docent, "Quick, show me the Mona Lisa. I'm double parked outside." Or the customer who says to the store clerk, "I'll take this chess set. And before you wrap it, can you teach me how to play?" We don't like to wait. We want it now. Fast food isn't fast enough. Microwave ovens are interminably slow. Remember when one-hour film processing seemed so fast? Now we wouldn't put up with waiting that long. We get our digital pictures instantly. I was somewhere recently where the evening news was on the TV, and I realized, wait, all these stories are old. I'd read about all of them on my news feed a day and a half before. The networks just can't keep up. In 1989, right before email became a common means of communication, I lived in Australia. I clearly remember the tempo of correspondence. Write a letter, wait a week for it to be delivered, several days for a response to be written, then a week for the reply to be returned. If you're lucky, somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks for a reply. Now, email is too slow and passé. If you really want to get a hold of someone, you text them. And if they don't respond immediately, you wonder if they're in some kind of mortal danger. We don't like to wait. Truth be told, that's just how the people who Mark was writing to felt as well. They didn't want to wait any longer. For them, life was hard. The future looked grim. And in ancient Hebrew thought, our modern idea of progress, of gradual change, didn't exist. Steady progress just wasn't a concept in the ancient world. Instead, time was perceived as a series of ages that changed with suddenness, one after the other. Wham! Bam! For Jews, there was the original paradise, the cursed world, and then the messianic kingdom that would appear on the clouds of heaven. Bam! 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 So, while a fiery apocalypse may seem scary to us, it was essentially an ancient Hebrew way of expressing hope for the victory of God. And what Mark was offering his hearers was the assurance that if you just wait a little longer, God will fix it. Poof! You don't know how, and you don't know when, but just wait. Stay awake. You'll see. Have hope. But as the years rolled by, this admonition to just wait has created a kind of laziness. These apocalyptic passages have given people the idea that all they have to do is wait around for the divine to break in and make all things right, and we don't have to do anything. But there are different approaches to waiting. There's waiting for that correspondence by post or email, the nothing you can do about it waiting, just waiting. And then there's the other definition of waiting, the idea of waiting upon someone or something, as in tending to. I used to be a waiter, Boston Sheraton, breakfast shift for the business crowd. I learned that if you pay attention, you can develop a heightened awareness of people's expectations. I learned that a good waiter learns the rhythm of the meal and can anticipate the customer's needs. I also learned how to peg the bad tippers ahead of time. But it was an interesting time in the food service industry. Things were changing, and unless you've been living under a rock, you'll know that waiters no longer exist. No waitresses either. In an effort to find a gender-neutral title, we were briefly referred to as waitrons, but that got nixed, thankfully, in favor of servers. Ah, now that's good. It's subtle, but my sense is that being able to say, "How may I serve you?" conveys more dignity than "How may I wait upon you?" And we've all heard the nightmare stories through the pandemic about customers who demand to be kowtowed to and disrespect their servers and other essential workers. So when we talk about Advent as being a season of waiting, I think it's good to be clear about what kind of waiting we're doing. It's not the kind of waiting that is purposeless, shiftless, I don't have anything to do kind of waiting. It's not an almost demeaning, how may I wait upon you kind of waiting. It's more like being on the serving staff. How can I serve you? And this is important as we try to excavate through all the distractions of the holiday and get a glimpse of something deeper. For many, it's about more lights, more extravagant gifts, and once-a-year acts of conspicuous generosity. And while we're at it, we'd also like a big dose of the holy, thank you very much, as long as it doesn't take too much work, because as Americans, we don't just want our fast food fast and our texts responded to immediately. We want our connection with the divine quick and easy too. One order of transcendence to go, please. Can you make that a large? And when that demand is left unmet, we compensate with more stuff. Look, most of us have everything we could ever want or need for not just basic survival, but genuine comfort. Even the most humble of us within the sound of my voice is richer and more privileged than the vast majority of people on the planet will ever dream of being. And yet that one thing many people yearn for often remains just out of reach because we want it right now, quick and easy. Marcus Borg called this one thing the more. We hunger for mystery, for awe, for the transcendent. And let's say we can get beyond the idea that quick and easy is going to work. We open ourselves to that big transcendent epiphany and wham, what do we get instead? Life. And we're ticked. Life? Seriously? Where's the transcendence? And I'll give you the answer that the mystics have given to that question from time immemorial, right in front of you. It's in the circumstances and the people we interact with every day, in the wonder of creation, in the intimacies of human life, and more often than not, in the experiences we have serving others. Take a look at the symbolism of the Christmas stories. Sure, there's a fancy star and some angels sing, but where does real transcendence get traction? How about in the awkwardness of the unplanned pregnancy of an unwed 13-year-old? In the vulnerability of a newborn child? Of people working the lowest, most demeaning jobs around, the shepherds, getting it before anyone else? Or of foreigners, the magi, journeying for countless miles to get just a glimpse of what others have right in front of them, if they just open their eyes to see it? Advent is the season of the Christian year that exists in the tension between scary apocalyptic visions and the quiet reality of everyday life. Advent is a reminder that while we're waiting for God to break into our lives in some big fancy way, we're more likely to get a glimpse of the divine in the simplest of mundane struggles, with the humblest of people, in the places we least expect. In our Mark passage, the hearers are encouraged to stay awake. And in our closing song, we're going to sing, "Find us ready, Lord, not standing still. Find us loving and working and doing God's will. Be alert, attentive to the needs of others, ready and waiting to lend a hand or an ear." There's an old quote that's been attributed to everyone from Augustine to medieval rabbis to Martin Luther King Jr., so it seems to have some broad credibility out there. Pray as if everything depended on God. Work as if everything depended on you. That's it, isn't it? The transcendence we long for is waiting to break into each one of our lives if only we'd pay attention and not be distracted by the temptation to expect the big, the fast, the easy. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel wrote, "Never once in my life did I ask God for success or wisdom or power or fame. I asked for wonder, and he gave it to me." And how was it given to him? Through his commitment to the same call of the prophets that Jesus heard and preached. As he became sensitive to the big issues, the plight of the poor, to racism and other forms of oppression, and what it takes to change the world for the better, he got a glimmer of transcendence and the wonder that comes with it. For many of us, the first thing we need to do before tackling the problems of the world is to muster the strength to make it through our own personal struggles. And it's exactly there that we get those first glimpses of transcendence. According to Mark, all we need to do is stay awake, be ready, because you never know when the presence of the Spirit is going to break through. If you're looking for some big, showy wrap-up to solve everything quickly and easily, I've got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. But if you can be open to the movement of the Spirit in the simplest and humblest of circumstances, in being intentional about serving others, then that longing for transcendence may not be too far from being fulfilled. After all, for lack of attention, 1,000 forms of loveliness elude us every day. Once upon a time, God decided to become visible to a king and a peasant and sent an angel to inform them of the blessed event. "O king," the angel announced, "God has deigned to be revealed to you in whatever manner you wish. In what form do you want God to appear?" Seated pompously on his throne and surrounded by awestruck subjects, the king royally proclaimed, "How else would I wish to see God, save in majesty and power? Show God to us in the full glory of power." God granted his wish and appeared as a bolt of lightning that instantly vaporized the king and his court. Nothing, not even a cinder, remained. The angel then manifested herself to a peasant, saying, "God deigns to be revealed to you in whatever manner you desire. How do you wish to see God?" Scratching his head and puzzling a long while, the peasant finally said, "I'm a poor man and not worthy to see God face to face. But if it's God's will to be revealed to me, let it be in those things with which I am familiar. Let me see God in the earth I plow, the water I drink, and the food I eat. Let me see the presence of God in the faces of my family, neighbors. And if God deems it as good for myself and others, even in my own reflection as well." God granted the peasant his wish, and he lived a long and happy life. Longing for the transcendent? Move beyond your conditioning to expect everything fast and easy. Stay awake. Be alert to recognizing the presence of the sacred in everyday life. You never know when or how it might show up. Keep longing.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information, or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.